Hey everybody, welcome to the Wolfpack Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Tyler Wolf, and I'm here with my friend Chat. Chat, how you doing, man?
Doing well. And yourself?
Good. Thanks for coming. We're in the Wolfpack Home Studios / Suffer Room, and what else do I want to call it? Pain Cave. And we just did what, like 45 minutes of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
Man, sorry, I'm still out of breath.
Me too.
I have really enjoyed recording podcasts down here because I feel like over all the running I've done and exercising I've done, there's nothing to tear down social walls like grappling.
Yeah.
Before you have a conversation. So tell us about yourself, man. And I'm trying to pronounce your name properly because I feel like you and your name are worth pronouncing properly, but I know you get a lot of people get away without pronouncing it right.
So it's pronounced Chat Jadosh is how it's correctly pronounced, but I go by Chad is fine always. But I'm from a small town in Poland.
Yeah.
I moved here in 2006 and went to the University of La Crosse for school. Didn't plan on staying here, but life happened and here I am.
When you say you didn't plan on staying here, do you mean Wisconsin?
Yeah. No.
What about the United States?
Nope. I was going to go back. So the reason why I came here for school was in Poland or in Europe specifically, it's universal schooling, universal healthcare. So when you want to go to school, you have to go to school in your own what's called a viodership. And so you have to go into a pooling process. And I didn't make the cut. Like hundreds of people come in. They only take 35 students per year. You have to wait a gap year. And I didn't want to just have to keep working. I wanted to get my life going. I grew up in the hills of Poland with no running water, no electricity. So I didn't want that lifestyle anymore. And so I just made the decision, whatever was going to be best. And of course, America looks at foreigners and they're like, hey, let's get them in. So they got me in pretty much. I applied and within like 2 or 3 weeks, I had already been accepted.
How long? So you lived in Poland until you were 18?
Yeah, correct.
Wow, that's incredible, man. I'm sure there's a lot. What do you think that your upbringing geographically, how does that affect you the most today, living in American culture?
So it makes you appreciate things a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't take anything for granted. I'm a pretty go with the flow type of guy. But because when you don't have anything, there's nothing really to compare anything to, right?
Yeah.
And in America, everything is go, go, go. My hometown, I mean, there's one street in and one street out, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
People are different there. And again, it's obviously cultures are, you know, quite different. I miss it more because that's where, you know, my family is from. And I also just miss the lifestyle a little bit different.
What's different there?
Again, just the people, like it's not about what you have. It's about who you are and what you can contribute to life. Mm. And I appreciate that. And I feel like even being here, I lose a lot of that of me. Because again, when you're surrounded by a certain type of group of people, you kind of adhere to like what the norms are here versus what the norms are there. And granted, yeah, I don't want to live without running water or electricity. But I do want the simplicity of what it is. And I'm not saying I want to live off the grid, but I also do. I don't like material things. Material things don't make me, you know, family does. Doing good things for good people.
Yeah.
I feel a better benefit from that than I do from anything else.
Yeah. It fascinates me. And while I ask this question, I'm going to check these levels, but it fascinates me that, it seems to me that in everywhere but America, the United States, it's more common to move and live abroad than the other way around.
Yeah, well, it's harder to do that. So, like, when
it's harder to do that here?
It's harder to do that going from. So, like, most Americans can go and study abroad versus most people from. And I'm only going to use Poland because that's what I know the majority of. But Poland doesn't just let people go study abroad. You can get 90 days in America. You can get student visas, but getting them are not easy. You have to be academically there to be able to do it. I mean, if you're failing in school, or if you're, I guess, C's are technically failing there.
Yeah.
So if you're a C student in Poland, they're not going to let you go and study abroad. First off, no one's going to want you even here. But
is it because they're helping pay for more of it?
No, they don't pay for anything. So like my school, I had to pay for everything here. If you stay there, they pay for everything. But if you're a C student, you'll be waiting 3 or 4 years before you're getting into college.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is I meet more people that grew up somewhere other than the United States and are living here for work or whatever.
Sure.
More than I hear about. When I hear about someone that was born and raised in the United States and now they're living in London or literally anywhere else, I go, that's not the norm.
Yeah.
Is that because of the nature of the United States or the nature of other parts of the world?
I think it's just the nature of other parts of the world. I mean, the United States is kind of their own thing. And again, different, especially Europe. Like Europe has very strict rules and regulations of who goes where and who does what.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why like Americans don't necessarily go and study as much across or why you hear more of foreigners coming here. I know the opportunities are a lot better here. And that's why I came here ultimately was to get not a better education, but get an education that I knew was going to be adequate to be able to get me through life.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always knew I wanted to study business, but I always knew I didn't want to be in dentistry. And 15 years later, I'm still in dentistry.
So tell me about the dentistry thing.
So,
like, what type of dentist? Like, what do you do?
So I manage 5 dental offices currently, soon to be 6.
Yeah.
And when I say manage, I run complete operations. We have an HR department that doesn't really do much of anything. So because of my experience, my boss just throws everything on my plate, which is pretty much the norm of, you know, hardworking people.
Sure.
But I got into dentistry because my aunt and uncle are a dentist and hygienist in Poland. My grandma that raised me, her son is my dad's dad, who was the dentist. And during the summer, when my grandma would go and tour Poland teaching Polka, I would be at their dental office. So I was answering phones when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. And that's how I learned dentistry to begin with.
Yeah.
And then, when I came here, I didn't want to do it. I wanted something new and different for myself.
But yeah.
Because of the situation I ultimately was in at that point, I didn't really have a choice and I didn't want to get into healthcare. And maybe it's an overshare, but I was going through cancer treatments when I was in college.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
When I was doing my internship, I was actually in the cancer ward, and the higher up people, I would sit in on meetings and things like that. And I won't mention the hospital, but they essentially spoke about people like they were numbers rather than actual people.
Yeah.
And when you're going through it, I, number one, didn't disclose that I was going through cancer treatments because I was going through somewhere else. But it left such a bad taste in my mouth because my major was healthcare business, or it was business administration, but in healthcare. And I never would be able to look at people the way that you're supposed to look at it from a business standpoint. And with dentistry, I at least knew that you can help people while still earning money. And it's not a dirty business. I mean, healthcare here is pretty bad, but dentistry wasn't. Dentistry was a kind of a savior for me, I guess, ultimately, because I had no other options.
Yeah.
Because
I wouldn't put everything that you've described so far into the suffering category proper, but I would say from cancer, which is true suffering, to moving across the globe, these are all things that, like, it's like internal whiplash.
Yeah.
So much of that. And how do you think that that's affected you as a person?
I mean, I've gone through a lot of stuff in life, and I do share it with people that want to hear it. And I never use it because I want anyone to ever feel bad for me, because I don't need that in my life.
You mean you don't prostitute your story?
Yeah, exactly. No, I internalize it until, you know, the conversation warrants something of that nature, and then I'm happy to share it. But I mean, struggle, everyone should struggle at some point in their life, and obviously there's different types of struggle in life. And no struggle is worse than the other, and I think that's where things always kind of fall. It's like everyone thinks, oh, my struggle is, or your struggle is far worse than mine, so I want to tiptoe around it. It's like, no, let's just have a conversation about it and let's just be open about it, because you can't grow unless you can talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had cancer 4 times in my life.
I'm going to be
37 years old. And I mean, I've struggled for far more than that even beforehand. And obviously cancer was far less of a struggle than the other things, you know, that I grew up dealing with.
Yeah. Wow. I had no idea, man. Did you, I don't know. I'm just going to ask it this way.
Sure.
Do you live in fear?
Do I live in fear?
It came and went 4 times.
No. So
how does that feel for you now?
Hopefully this is an overshare, but
when I
was 16 years old, my mother pushed me down the stairs just so she can go. And I guess I'll give a little bit of backstory before that. So, I wasn't raised by my mom. My mom ended up moving to the US, I think when I was like 14, and she had just asked my grandma if in the summers I could come and visit. And she was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And it was the last day before I was leaving back to Poland. I was 16. She wanted to go to the bar. She wanted to go get, you know, high. And so I just begged her. I'm like, hey, please don't leave. I leave in 12 hours. Please just, you know, hang out with me a little bit. That's something I never struggled with. I didn't ever care to, you know, be involved with my mom. But again, I was there and yeah. I thought, hey, you fought for me to be here for a summer. You know, let's spend time together, which she never did. Well, long story short, they had a spiral staircase in their house, and it had these like angel wing type accents on the stair. And I was standing at the top of the stairs and she pushed me. And when I fell down the spiral staircase, and my arm from my wrist all the way into the crook of my elbow was cut open. And she still left. She didn't call an ambulance. She didn't do anything. Thankfully, my stepdad happened to come home and saw that I was in a pool of blood.
Right.
And so that's just, you know, a very minute case, but I was essentially left for dead. And, you know, my mom is long past now, but I mean, one of the last things that she said to me, she wishes that the ambulance took longer, which would have meant I would have been dead. So
right.
I've kind of always lived life as if the next day is going to be the next day. But when I had cancer the first time, they told me I wouldn't live 8 months. They said wow. It was so progressive. So what had it happened from an injury ultimately is what they're saying. Wow. I had a large epidermal vein, and it tore. Well, cysts essentially formed on it, and they formed within like a 6 month period, and they were crystallizing. And so the doctor said, you know, you need to get your affairs in order. You have maybe 6, maybe 8, possibly 12 months, even with treatment, because it's that rapid. Well, time came and passed, and I went through treatment and I started to get better and started to get better. And here I am. So, you know, at 20 years old, I had told myself I'm never going to live in fear of ever dying, because there's no real point. We're going to live and we're going to die no matter what happens. Right. Yeah. But kind of going back to what we were saying before, being a good person, I know, like, if and when I do die, I can at least know that I did the right things. And not always, but, you know, I did enough for other people to feel good about myself. And that I do hold pride in that. I know you shouldn't, but I hold pride knowing that I do good things for other people that need it.
Yeah. Wow. I'm sorry that all that happened.
You know, I'm going to be 37, and you live and you learn, and you learn what you don't want to be. And I learned that at a very young age, and I've never been that.
Yeah.
I've always tried to stay away from drugs. I've always tried to stay away from alcohol, and I just never want to become, you know, what I knew. Mm-hmm. I want to be who I want to be.
I want to ask you about God, and I'll give a few disclaimers. One, I'm not here to win your soul.
No.
And I actually don't. I usually don't bring God up on the podcast. So, and this has nothing to do with me being a pastor or what I believe personally. I am truly curious. I'd like to know what everything you've been through, how it has affected your perception or disbelief in God, whatever it is.
Sure. I may go on a tangent because there's kind of a I grew up Jewish in a Jewish household, very religious, grandmother, and my faith essentially was kind of shattered when I was in college initially.
Why is that?
So there were two gentlemen that felt they needed to take advantage of my sister, and it brought me to a really dark place. And several months later, after all that had happened, is when I had cancer. And so I looked at it as like, what is there really any, or like all of this upbringing that I have as far as religion and faith, like why am I believing in something that something so negative can, and I know that's like a big thing for everyone. Everyone loses their faith when negativity happens. And I get that you're supposed to like follow the opposite. You're supposed to like allow the sequences to advance. But it really broke my spirit and like everything that I was, I don't want to say force fed, because again, I have nothing against religion. I have nothing against people that follow religion. And again, I do follow a lot of religious, I guess, paths, if you want to say it that way.
Sure.
I just no longer follow synagogue. You know, my wife and kids and I were going to go to back to Waukesha to the synagogue there, and I guess kind of the treatment and like the way of how they were going about bringing us in, it seemed more about money. And that was very different than what I was accustomed to. Our synagogue in Poland was, I mean, it was probably the size of like 10 churches in one, and people just came in, and it wasn't about money. It was all about people and gathering and getting together. And obviously everyone, you know, pays money in, you know, you pay a percentage of your paycheck, but it was more about the people, and I felt like I lost a lot of it because of the negative aspects of things.
Yeah.
And I hope that answers your question. I know I kind of went off.
Yeah, it does. But that's great. Yeah. Wow, man. Well, thanks for answering that.
Yeah.
Because I get a lot of people won't. I get the feeling not a lot of people are totally honest with me because they know what I do believe and what I do for a living, being a minister. So I appreciate the honesty. I'm going, no, I don't. I want to just know people. You know what I'm saying? I want to know where you're coming from, especially if you don't believe like I do. Or you're
right. But I think with you, you're more open about, obviously, you know, your religious side, but also just taking a stepping away from that as well. Like you don't need, and forgive me if I'm overstepping, but
you're not.
You outside of the religion aspect of it, you still follow all those beliefs, but you're still a solid person in the fact that you can understand other people and not judge them based off of, you know, not believing what you believe in. And I know that sounds silly, but I mean, overall, I think that your approach to people versus religion is pretty awesome. And honestly, I've never seen that before, especially coming up from a Jewish background, because in Judaism, or Judaism is how it's technically pronounced.
Sure.
It's very forceful. I mean, religion is religion, and you need to be doing it at all points and times. And if you say the wrong thing, it's like, oh, you have to revert back to religion. And yes, you may have aspects like that, but from the time that I've ever met you, it was more about just having a conversation rather than having to, again, feed the, like, this is what I believe, so this is how it's going to make you better. No, you actually sit and you listen to the actual message. And I've always appreciated that. That's why I messaged you the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
we met outside of a Quick Trip and talked.
Yeah, that conversation truly meant a lot, because I've been going through a lot of just mental struggle. I don't want to say mental health struggle, but I just, everyone goes through it where you just feel beaten and battered. And honestly, it was just one of those things that I needed in the moment. And I went home and my wife's like, you got to send a message to him, because it meant enough to me to say something to somebody else. Yeah.
No, thanks for saying that, man. That means a lot. I work really hard. I just, who likes to have like the pressure put on them, let's say by a car salesman?
Right.
We hate that. Or it's somebody on the Vegas Strip trying to sell you a vacation. We just hate the pressure.
Yeah.
But then we think because the stakes are so high, for a Christian, let's talk about eternal damnation, heaven and hell. We go, well, no, we should put the pressure on there. I'm going, no.
No.
You shouldn't. We shouldn't treat people's souls like they are, you know, a new car.
Exactly.
Close the deal.
And not everything is people. And not everything is literal either.
Sure.
And with religion, then I that's one aspect of religion that I actually do enjoy, is most of it is written out for you to have a belief, but it's also interpretation. How you interpret, you know, one passage may not be the same way that someone else is going to take it. Or when you're, and forgive me, I don't know if it's a sermon or not, but if you're giving, you know, a sermon or a speech, and I know it sounds ignorant, but
yeah, no, it's great.
Everyone that you're essentially speaking to or reaching out to is taking that message in their own way, because everyone struggles in a different way. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the message itself. And again, tooting your horn, I think you're great at being able to decipher who the person is and how to reach them and reach them in a positive way, without making them feel like, hey, I'm not understanding, or I'm taking it differently than what you were trying to allude to, essentially.
Sure. I appreciate that. Wow. Thanks, man. So let's talk about fighting a little bit. Normally we talk about resources.
Sure.
And we don't really even need to get into that if we don't need to, but so let's do this. Tell me about how you got started fighting and grappling. And then let's talk about the time that you and I were in a two-man bracket tournament.
Right. So I started martial arts when I was 7. My uncle, the one that was a dentist, he and his brother owned over 300 acres of land, and they also own 2 sambo gyms.
Because, oh, cool.
In Europe, sambo is pretty big. Now jiu-jitsu is finally growing in Poland specifically. But I grew up on the border of, at the time, it was technically still USSR driven Ukraine.
Okay.
And I grew up in the People's Republic of Poland, which was Soviet run.
Okay.
Until I was 8 years old. So all the gyms there were pretty much sambo gyms. Sambo was created by the Soviets for their army to be able to withstand pain, and, you know, everything that most people know about sambo is exactly what it is. So my uncles, at a very young age, because I was kind of abused as a kid, they wanted me to be able to be mentally and physically strong at a very young age. And I'm very grateful for it, because I'll always use those properties in life. Had to compete every weekend.
Wow.
And when I say compete, it's a Saturday and Sunday. It's unlike, you know, what we do here, where it's a grappling industry. It's, you know, one day,
right?
And you maybe get 4 matches. This is like a pool of people. Hundreds of people show up. You essentially start, and they just bracket you until the end of the day. And if you make it to the next day, you keep going. And if you don't, they still have a, like, what they call the loser circle.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And even with that, then you get, that's your second place. So they don't do first, second, third. They only do first and second. And if you make it to the next day, it's all based off of points and essentially how good you looked doing it.
Oh, sure.
But the sambo properties are, it's hard for me to practice a lot of other martial arts here. I've done a couple of pankrations, and it's hard for me, because sambo, your hands are always low, and in sambo you can headbutt. So even in my jiu-jitsu, you'll probably notice that, like, I always drive with my head, and that's why I get caught with guillotine so much. It's because I'm so just accustomed to driving in with my head, so I can hit their chest and things like that. And it's all illegal in jiu-jitsu. It's kind of a skill I'm trying to avert away from. Then when I moved to the U.S., La Crosse had a sambo gym.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a very small one. I think there was maybe like 12 or 13 people.
Yeah.
And they eventually did end up closing. And when they closed, I ended up just being done with martial arts, and I had so many injuries, so many ailments that, like, at 25 years old, you probably shouldn't have.
Right.
So I rested my body for a few years, and then I moved to the Madison area. Madison has a sambo gym, and because I was under 18 when I first moved here, and I practiced when I was in, you know, La Crosse, but it wasn't the same type of opponents. I mean, I went against like 16, 17, and 18 year old kids that could probably beat, you know, black belts here. And I'm not saying that ignorantly. I'm just saying that the skill level for sambo was just so different.
Yeah.
And when I went to Madison, I was just getting whooped. And it was very disheartening, because, again, I thought I was good. And then you find out how bad you really are when, you know, you've taken some time off, you let yourself heal, and these people are just continuing on.
Yeah.
But Then eventually, you know, we found Open Guard, and it was kind of
and
a
that's
savior.
Where you and I met.
Yeah, and it was kind of a savior for me. I needed some sort of outlet to. I'm not a very angry person, but I'm an internal person, sure. Meaning when things affect me, no one will ever know because I just shut down and I don't say a single thing.
Sure.
And it's not beneficial because obviously for my kids, it's not the same way because obviously it's tough to be a parent, but it was affecting, you know, myself and my wife. Because again, I grew up with people that didn't really care, didn't really talk. And obviously my grandma did, but I wasn't raised with hugs and things like that. And I needed to have the, I needed to let my quote anger out. Cause I'm not an angry person. I don't even fight angry. I fight because I just love doing
I've
it.
I've never felt that from you.
Yeah. And again, I just do it cause I love it.
Yeah.
And it's sick, but I love the pain. Yeah. I love every aspect of it. I don't even care if I'm hurt. I love being able to just flow, you know, again, it's a fun sport until it's not, but, shit, no, I don't even remember where I was going.
No, that's great. That's great, man. So you found Open Guard.
Yeah. So I found Open Guard, met a lot of great people, and it just continued my journey of loving martial arts again. And it kind of is continuing on from there.
Yeah. And these days you and your family train at Underground, Submission Grappling, and Dousman.
Correct.
Dousman, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So
I always get Dousman and Wales mixed up with Ken.
Yes. Brandon. Yeah. I trained a lot at noon classes, which I think you and I used to train a lot at noon classes. And I would always gain a lot from Ken. Ken always has a lot of great messages, and he's just a great overall person.
He's been on the show before, and I love Ken.
Yeah. And I don't want to just toot his horn. Please, but again, do. He and Daryl have always kind of been there for me and for our family. So it was an easy kind of transition. It wasn't anything against anyone at Open Guard. It was more about just what I was getting. And not that I look to Daryl and Ken as father figures, but they are older than me. And I'm kind of, sometimes I'm like a little kid when it comes to it. Cause I like the recognition from them. I like being able to make them, you know, them proud, make the gym proud, things like that. So, I got a lot from them, and I still continue to do that. And it's beneficial for me, and it's beneficial for my family.
That's cool. One thing I've seen in Ken, who owns the gym you train at, is that so the way I say, I've said it twice now on this episode, I'm not here to win your soul.
Like, yeah.
Pressure doesn't help many things. And that is something I think Ken exhibits as well.
He goes, yeah.
Like, I want you to do what makes you happy.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And that's what's perfect about the gym too, is your training style is your training style, and he'll cater to what works for you. And he tells me all the time, and actually just told me, because March 30th, I was hopefully going to get a cage grappling match, and my opponent was going to be a brown belt. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't make me nervous. And that's not because I'm arrogant. Again, I lose sometimes against white belts. I mean, we all do.
Sure.
But again, I love the challenge, and I also just love the sport. And I don't care whether I want to win. Obviously, everyone wants to win, but I don't look at losing as necessarily as a bad thing. I look at it as like, where is it going to bring me to the next step?
Yeah.
Of how to be better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great, man. Grappling Industries. So let's finish with this story. And I want to, please, I want you to correct me if I get the details wrong.
Sure.
You and I were in the Masters Division 30 plus.
Yes.
Same weight class at white belt.
Yes.
And guys dropped out of our bracket. So it was just you and I in a bracket fighting for first and last place.
Yes.
First and second place. And I was like, oh, well, I'm getting a medal either way, so I'm happy. No. So our first matches were in the gi, and I just want to make sure I get these facts right. Am I right that first match I won with a rear choke, right?
You did.
What happened the second match?
You got me in a rear naked choke. It was, so you got dual.
So I won both matches. And again, I'm wildly uncomfortable sharing this story, but I'm sharing it because I know how it ends. I won both of our gi matches with chokes from the back.
Correct. The second choke, you had my lapel in with the choke, which made it even worse because it was even tighter.
Can I be honest with you? I had my own lapel. Or did you watch the video?
No, you did. Yeah, your own lapel. You did. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You're right.
And then I brought the hand back.
Yep.
And I'll just say this. This is one of those weird jiu-jitsu compliments. I was so thrilled to have won those matches because of how good you are, especially in a competitive environment.
Well, and I appreciate that because I will tell you, I could not amp myself up to go against you because to that point, you and I had trained a lot.
Yeah.
And I knew we knew each other's skills quite well, but I was nervous against going up against a friend. And sure. Cody, who was training at Open Guard, he came up to me and he's like, you have to let that go. He goes, because at the end of the day, you guys are going to shake hands and you're still going to be training partners and none of it matters. But my mind doesn't work that way. My mind is like, I have to go up against a friend. Yeah. And not being arrogant, but it's like, if I hurt him, like, I don't feel good about myself, right? Sure. Yeah, not that I want to hurt anyone else, but I'm more than happy to choke someone out. And if they go out, they go out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's a friend, I don't want to have that look, right? Mm-hmm. So I was very nervous with gi. And I honestly have never really competed in a full gi before.
Sure.
That was my first jiu-jitsu competition in gi.
Yeah. Well, then the time came a few hours later for us to go into our no-gi matches. For non-jiu-jitsu people, gi is like the pajama look and uniform you wear in jiu-jitsu. And then now no-gi for non-jiu-jitsu people, shorts and a t-shirt. And I was feeling confident, and we went to our matches, and it was definitely less than a minute and a half. Do you remember?
I think the first one was like 20 seconds.
you took me down straight ankle lock right away.
Yeah. The plan was my wife and my kid were quite tired and they wanted to leave.
I learned about this part of the story today.
They wanted to leave, and my game plan was to not do anything with legs because, again, I didn't want to get into the position where I would hurt your legs where you couldn't walk. And I know at some point you ended up breaking your leg at grappling industry.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be the guy that did it. And so she turned to me and she's like, listen, you got to get out of your own head. Like, we want to go home. Go. We're hungry.
Yeah.
Just get it done and over with. And so I knew what to do and went for your legs and almost was disqualified, but I pled my case and he understood. So it was all good.
Well, okay. So the first match you straight ankle locked me, right? Straight
Correct. Ankle.
And then the second match we were about to go in and I remember saying to myself, okay, he's good with legs. All you have to do, because I don't know a lot, especially then, I didn't know a lot of the nuanced defenses.
Sure.
I knew, like, my defense to leg stuff was very much like, get your knee line back, like, or just get out of there, you know, just very not smart defense or intelligent defense. But so I just go, just keep your feet away from it. Just don't let him get a foot, Tyler. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
And, we went in and it was maybe a little bit longer before you straight ankle locked.
Yeah, I think the second one was like a minute and something. But with me, for the reason why I focus so much on legs is, again, the Sambo background, under 18, it's kind of ironic, but like they don't want anyone breaking limbs.
Yeah.
But you can stand and you can punch and you can headbutt. But when you're under 18, you can only rear naked choke, straight arm bar.
Oh,
and you can only,
I'm gonna plug this in. Yeah, keep going.
Ankle lock. And you could straight ankle only. So that was always my bread and butter, but like when I work out, I focus a lot on my legs, so I have the leg strength. So I don't necessarily always care what position I'm in, because I know I'll be able to find the legs somehow. And I'm cool with, you know, wrestling out of things to be able to get to it, but I don't ever wrestle up to my feet, and it's probably to a fault of my own because then I end up always getting choked.
Yeah.
But I don't ever wrestle to stand at that point. I'm always just going to wrestle to get your leg or your feet.
Yeah. Well, that just happened before this podcast about 40 times. Man, Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking to you. You're welcome back on the show, to my home, anytime you want.
I appreciate this.
Look forward to training more with you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else you want to put out into the world?
No, I'm good.
Because I literally have like tens of listeners. And they're all my mom. What's up, Sally? All right, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.